This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak to Heather Clark about her novel, The Scrapbook. The Scrapbook is a novel that's a modern-day love story in the shadow of German history. It's a Germany of artists, philosophers, virtuosos, and World War II. At the fore of it all, in the 1990s, we meet Anna O'Brien, a young woman who's a student at Harvard. She meets a visiting student from Germany. Christoph is a contrast to Anna. He's worldly, and she has dedicated herself to her studies. But she falls for him, hard. She devises a way to meet him after he returns to Germany. Their relationship is intense and serious, but it's affected by a very strange fact. Both of their grandfathers were in World War II. Anna's grandfather witnessed the plight of Holocaust victims in the days after liberation and helps to capture Hitler's eagle's nest. Christoph's grandfather fought for Nazi Germany. Two generations later, these two young people meet and are still affected by the idea of dark family legacies, of historical conscience, of not quite being able to get a hold of this strange force that threatens to tear them apart. I spoke to author Heather Clark about her novel, The Scrapbook. Heather, can you first just give us a summary of the novel? Just tell us, what's it about?
Yeah, it is a World War II novel, but it's not a typical World War II novel. In a way, it's about the legacy of the war. It's a 1990s love story, but it's also a 1940s war story, and it operates on dual timelines. So it's mainly about a young American woman named Anna, who falls head over heels in love with a very handsome and intelligent visiting German student named Christoph, right as she's about to graduate from Harvard. They spend a week talking about art and literature and music, politics, history, and she's just completely swept away by this charming European man, and she decides to try to make a long-distance relationship work. So she travels to Germany over the course of a formative year, and he takes her around. They visit Nuremberg, Heidelberg, Munich, and the Dachau concentration camp. Now, this is important because Anna and Christoph's grandfathers, fought on opposite sides of World War II. Anna's grandfather was a GI who was in one of the army units that helped liberate Dachau, and he took photos there and put them in his wartime scrapbook, which she has seen. Christoph's grandfather was in the Wehrmacht, the German army, and fought on the Eastern Front. So the novel intertwines Anna and Christoph's present-day love affair with flashbacks to the wartime experiences of their grandfathers in the 1940s. And Anna and Christoph don't know that much about their grandfather's wars at the beginning of the novel, but as Christoph takes her through Germany to these towns, they sort of confront these dark inheritances, and their relationship becomes more and more unsettled. So one of the questions the novel asks is whether that relationship can survive this brutal encounter with familial and national history. You know, is love enough? The war has been over for 50 years, but is it really over? So it's a book about inheritances, I would say. And to sum it up, a friend said, it's like Before Sunrise meets Saving Private Ryan.
That's
which,
really good.
Which I actually thought was a pretty decent 2-second pitch, you know.
I like that. But I like the way you described it, too. So, you know, I had occasion to interview Todd Lending recently. He's a documentary filmmaker, but he wrote a novel called The Umbrella Maker's Son. And it's really fascinating to me, this idea of taking an object like an umbrella, a scrapbook, mm-hmm. and creating a very new world around that. But it's a very new world that's really rooted in something else. I want to ask you, that when did the idea first take root for you? Tell us about this scrapbook, your grandfather's scrapbook, right? And how that was the seedbed for this book.
This is my fifth book, and the previous four books were nonfiction works. My last book was a biography of Sylvia Plath, a very big biography of Sylvia Plath named Red Comet. And I looked at a lot of scrapbooks when I worked on that biography. I always had a kind of professional scholarly distance from those. This was different. So my grandfather was in an army unit that helped liberate Dachau. It wasn't the official liberating unit, but he was there, and it was sort of chaotic in those last days of the war. And he took photos, which the Holocaust Museum has dated to April 29th, 1945, which is the day of Dachau's liberation. So he took these horrific photos that ended up in his wartime scrapbook that was kind of stowed out of the way for decades. And my grandfather never really talked about his experience at Dachau. We all knew that he was there, but we didn't bring it up. He didn't want to talk about it. He gave one interview about it to my aunt. And, you know, I just think these guys, that generation, they didn't want to talk about it. It was something that really shadowed his life. And what he did say is that they had no idea what they were walking into when they went to Dachau. Absolutely no idea. He said the higher ups didn't tell them a thing. They had no frame of reference. They're walking into hell. They're standing at the abyss of the 20th century, and they don't know what it is. I had a lot of compassion for him after I saw his real scrapbook after his death in 2015. That's the first time I saw the scrapbook. And the photos in there haunted me. And I just couldn't stop thinking about them. All of a sudden, I had this very personal connection to the Holocaust. And again, I looked at many, many scrapbooks as a scholar and a biographer, but this was my own family's archive. And I decided to write about it in a novel because I didn't think that I had the right historical background to write a nonfiction book about World War II. I knew that would take years and years of very difficult scholarly labor, and it just wasn't my field. But I thought I can tackle some of these questions in a novel. So that's what I did. And I spent a couple of weeks in 2023 traveling around Germany, kind of following in my grandfather's footsteps as best I could, going to Dachau, going to Berchtesgaden, where he also was, and Munich, and all these places, just to try to kind of see them with my own eyes.
You know, I do think of you as this tremendous writer of nonfiction. And I was going to ask you about why a novel, why not a work of nonfiction, but you've answered that. But here is this novel. Was it ever at first a work of nonfiction? And then what was that like for you to say, no, I think this is a novel instead? And did you feel any trepidation about moving into that other genre? Did you consider maybe sinking back into something very, very familiar to you and not writing the novel?
Yeah, it's a great question. I wrote a lot of fiction in my 20s before I became sidetracked as an academic and had to write books for tenure and you felt like I had to write in a certain way, right? Because I was an English professor. And there were professional demands on what I was supposed to publish. But I always wrote a lot of fiction. And I started this novel in the late 90s. So I wrote about, I don't know, 50 pages or so. I was personally unsettled when I spent time in Germany in the late 90s. I felt like there were no traces of the war where I was in around Bavaria. I just felt like I was sitting in these charming German squares, and there were so few memorials and monuments, and it was like the war had been erased, right? Everything had been rebuilt, and it unsettled me. Maybe because I knew my grandfather's story, and even then I was interested in that. So I sort of started this novel about these two lovers and in Germany and some of these questions concerning the weight of history, but as I say, momentum stalled. And then when I saw my grandfather's scrapbook in 2015, I remembered that earlier attempt. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, the scrapbook was rich in terms of its metaphoric potential and as an object, as an archival object, which makes us confront maybe some things that we don't want to confront. There's a German word that is very long, but it's sort of a fascinating concept. It's Vergangenheitsbewältigung. I don't speak German, so please excuse the accent. Vergangenheitsbewältigung. It means literally coming to terms with the past. So in Germany, this is coming to terms with the Nazi past, right? But I thought it was just an interesting idea that I could connect with the scrapbook, right? With this wartime scrapbook. and make that sort of the center of this novel. And again, I know what it's like to research a nonfiction book. It takes so long. There's so much labor involved in that, going to archives. I mean, Red Comet took me 10 years to write. I didn't want to do that for this book. I just thought there was a way into these questions about love and history and family inheritance and intergenerational guilt. There was a way into that through fiction. So I saw that path kind of open up when I sat down with my grandfather's literal scrapbook. And I just, again, these photos haunted me. And I was very driven to write this book after I finished Red Comet. But I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone I was writing a novel. I just didn't know how this would shape up or go down. So I just did it on the sly.
And is Bud Clark a lot like Jack O'Brien?
You know, interestingly, he's not, because I didn't know much about my grandfather's war. There's a line in the scrapbook where Anna says, "I was making it all up, his war." Hmm. And in a way, that's kind of a meta line there, because I had so few details. And again, I made this decision not to go down that rabbit hole and researching my actual grandfather's actual wartime experience. I could have gone to the military archives. I'm a biographer. I know how to do this. I could have gone down that road, and I didn't. I didn't want to do that. So I purposefully made up this other character, and I read a lot of soldier memoirs to help me shape this character of Jack O'Brien. So he does share the fact that he was at Dachau and he was at Berchtesgaden and he took photos there and he put them in a scrapbook. But otherwise, he's a figment of my imagination. I sort of play with biography and fiction in this novel, and I was interested in what happened when those two things collide as a biographer, putting bits of real biography into a novel and spinning these fictions around the seeds of biographical truth. Like what happens when you do that? So for me, it was a bit of an experiment in genre as well.
Well, I was thinking about, a lot of us read and love Red Comet. I carried that book around for so long.
Oh, did you? Thank you so much.
It's a gorgeous book.
It's a heavy book.
It's a heavy book, but it's so such a beautiful book. And I think of you as this very thorough researcher, as you said. I wondered, you sort of answered the question, if you had that kind of impulse or that tendency to be so super thorough with the details related to the grandfathers and the historical details, the war and Germany itself. And then I wondered, like, what parts of your brain do you have to turn off to in order to not go there? Because I did read your selected sources and your author's note. I know that you still did a fair share of research. But I was thinking, too, within all of that about the Holocaust. You know, recently I talked to Lucy Adlington. She's the clothes historian who wrote The Dressmakers of Auschwitz. And she has a more recent book called Four Red Sweaters. And I asked her about this idea of writing about the Holocaust and the persecution of Jews. We talked a little bit about how that's something in the now still. Mm-hmm. And Holocaust denial is such a real thing today. It's kind of mind-boggling. There's a Jewish community center here in San Antonio that had to close today all of their summer programs for children because there was some kind of a threat that somebody called in. That was just today.
Oh, my God.
It just seems so, like, such an intransigent problem, like such an impossible thing to resolve. I hope I'm wrong, but I wonder how you think about that element of the book, that's a very important element in this book, as the book moves through reading communities, as you go on book tour, as you meet more readers and more audiences. Do you think about that? Do you consider that idea?
Absolutely. And I would say that is the main reason I think I decided to finish this novel that I had started so long ago, because I am so disgusted by Holocaust denial, and I think it's growing, especially because we're living in this post-truth age. And I felt like, okay, I have access to documentary evidence that this happened. I mean, my grandfather's photos are horrific, and but they are evidence of war crimes. And I wanted his testimony to survive somehow. I mean, these photos were kind of stowed away in the scrapbook for a long time in my grandparents' house. I think no one really knew what to do with it, how to talk about it. My grandfather didn't want to talk about it, and we respected that. But he took them because he wanted to try to get the word out about what was happening. He developed them in Germany, and by the way, was horrified when the German shopkeeper just handed him the envelope like these were no big deal. And he sent them home to Massachusetts saying, "Get the word out. This is really happening. I really saw this." Because it's like who would believe, right? So he had these photos. And so for me, I feel like he wanted to get the word out back then. And this is my way of completing that circle, I suppose, is getting these photos, talking about these photos, talking about Dachau. In the novel, there's one section where I quote my grandfather. He gave one interview about his experience at Dachau to my aunt, and luckily she filmed it. And so there's a paragraph in there when I say in my author's notes that those are his real words. I didn't want to make those words up. I wanted his testimony in this book, his eyewitness testimony. And so he talks about arriving at Dachau and what it was like. So absolutely. I mean, I think that's a really important thing to me. I feel that the memory of the war is fading. I have read that it takes three generations for the memory of war to fade. And that's my generation, right? So Christoph says to Anna at one point in the book, "We will be the last people who remember the stories of our grandparents." So in a way, this whole book was about me getting my grandfather's story down. And maybe that's the biographer part of me, right? But just doing it in this different way, reframing it in fiction. And because I think, we ignore the lessons of Dachau at our own peril. So yes, this is a really big part of the book for me.
You mentioned Anna and Christoph. I love their love. I love their intense, these two in their 20s in the 1990s. I get it. I just love this, this part of the story. I love the cover of the book also. They add their own sort of element to the scrapbook. They have this very strong attraction. I feel like a lot of it is very cerebral and not so cerebral. I mean, it's just beautiful. This is another reason that we read. So I want to sort of, shed some light on that part of the book too, because I think with love stories, if they're star-crossed a little bit, what is that about? And in this case, we come to understand that it's a very, very heavy thing. It sort of stands in for other things. There's a kind of a very deep historical thing that's happening here that's affecting them. But then you just think about how it could be anything. And what's left there is just this idea of their attraction to each other, the ways that they are learning about love with each other. That's just part of the novel that I hope people will also pay attention to, because it's really a lovely aspect of the book too.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you had that reaction. Yeah. I mean, it's really a love story, this novel.
It really is. It's just like this magic thing in your novel where the fiction and the nonfiction elements merge, where there's this whole historical thing happening. There's this, thing. We're in the 1940s. We're in those spaces and trying to understand how this could even happen. And then there's this love story. I just feel like maybe because of the way our world is, like right at this moment, I think about these kinds of things, watching, for example, maybe it might seem unrelated ostensibly, but families being separated, husbands and wives being separated, boyfriends and girlfriends being separated, partners being
Yeah.
separated for various different reasons in our country today. And it seems like wars are about to just blow up all around us any minute now. But there's, I think about this, people do fall in love. People do think about, trivial things like how they look or whatever, even when there are these big momentous things happening all around them. Just this merging of these elements in your novel. Another thing that you just almost cannot believe is the presence of fascism, even a tiny crumb of it being so present in our lives, like the Holocaust denial, and looming so large. And I know it takes a long time to write a book like this and to think about it and work on it and write it and research it and revise it and so on. But I'm wondering about the timing, and if you think about how it sort of addresses this kind of thing, even with a character like Christoph, for example, if you think about a person who could conceivably represent something that somewhere you find questionable, let's say, or that you couldn't possibly get involved with that because of XYZ, because of these reasons. But there is a kind of a love that can override that, and that the two characters have to reckon with in some way, shape, or form. There's not even a question. Sorry, there's just a jumble of ideas. I'm just thinking about how in our world today, we have in workspaces, we have at dinner tables on Thanksgiving, within families, people who are just so divided by their politics. And yet we have to find a way through, you know. So I just wonder how a book like this just lands with such impeccable timing with these kinds of ideas at the fore.
Yeah, you know, this book is so timely, and I didn't foresee that it would be this timely. I wrote most of it in 2022, and the fall of 2023, I turned it in, I think, 2 days before October 7th. Because I remember when October 7th happened, I thought, oh my God. I mean, I had just turned this book in that is set in the shadow of the Holocaust. And then the world changed, right, on October 7th. And so, yeah, it's become so timely in this. A lot of what the main characters do, Anna and Christoph, they talk about history, and they kind of struggle with, how did this happen? How did this happen in Germany, the quote unquote most cultured nation in Europe, a nation that revered its poets, its composers, right? And yet descended into the most egregious and inhumane form of barbarism. How did that happen? And Christoph especially, it haunts him. It kind of torments him. As a young German, and he feels comfortable confiding in Anna, I think, about all of this, because she's foreign and she's interested in it too because of her grandfather. So they kind of stumble into this reckoning almost accidentally, but once it starts, it has to play out, and that's part of the tension of the book. What happens when love comes up against the weight of history? And, you know, Christoph tells Anna this story, which I still can't believe. I mean, it affected me so much. When the Nazis built Buchenwald, the concentration camp, they left an oak tree standing in the middle of the camp. This tree was known as Goethe's Oak, Goethe, the great German poet. And apparently Goethe used to sit under this tree and compose poetry, and so it was always associated with him. The Germans didn't want to cut it down, so they left it standing in the middle. They left it standing at Buchenwald. I mean, so Christoph says to Anna, I mean, you can just hear the emotion in my voice as I tell the story, because it just emblematizes the issue that these two young people are struggling with. You know, he says, for me, this is Germany. So how do you make sense out of any of this? And for me, you know, I have a background in poetry. I'm a poetry scholar by training, and one of the issues I'm interested in is the relationship between ethics and aesthetics, and how do we write about war? How do we write about the Holocaust? How do we write about violence without aestheticizing it? So that was a huge challenge for me in this book, and Anna and Christoph talk about this too. But like, is love, is art, is beauty, are these things redemptive in a world scarred by mass murder? Like, do they have any redemptive quality anymore? are they a bulwark against fascism, against inhumanity? I mean, so they just tackle these big questions in the book that I think have relevance today, real relevance. I mean, we've got Elon Musk throwing Sieg Heils, yeah. Right? Just he's doing Nazi salutes. We've got J.D. Vance at the Munich Security Conference telling Europeans that, you know, the threat is within. We have the AfD in Germany rising. It's a neo-Nazi party. So, yeah, I mean, this, I feel like the themes in this book are so, so relevant today.
They really are. They come with impeccable timing, as it turns out. But I want to go back to this Goethe's tree. You know, that comes fairly early on in the novel, early on in their love. And I remember reading that and just being kind of blown away by it. But there is something to these elements, too. I mean, these are two people from two very different worlds trying to figure it out. And they are trying to figure it out with a kind of a common language of literature and art and philosophy and music.
Yes.
And I love that about this book. I love it when he buys her the little pink scarf. You know, yeah. I just think that's emblematic too, you know, in its way. There's so much to learn. There's so much to, I think, remind ourselves about. But also to just dive into and enjoy. Heather Clark, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Heather Clark is the author of The Scrapbook. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.